You are listening to a free podcast of The Majority Report with Sam Cedar. To support the show and receive nearly an hour extra material daily, become a member today at majority.fm. Resistance is futile.
October 5th, 2011. My name is Sam Cedar. This is the Majority Report. We are broadcasting live, not in the literal nor metaphorical shadow of the New York Times building, but in fact in the literal shadow of, well, I guess the Hilton Hotel. We're at the Hilton Hotel in Washington, D.C. for the Campaign for America's Future Take Back America contract. I can't quite figure out what the title of this conference is. But we're here. And, forgive the sound. I think we're peaking a little bit.
I haven't done that since the 60s.
All right, bear with us, folks. And hopefully the sound is getting a little bit better. Okay, great. And joining me will be various guests from the conference. And first up, ladies and gentlemen, real pleasure to welcome to the program. Well, before I do that, before I welcome anybody to the program, let me first say that I did a couple of panels this morning, and both of which I will make a... All right, folks. Both of which we are live here in the Hilton Hotel at the Campaign for America's Future conference. And I did two panels this morning. I'll make both of those available to, at the very least, our members. And to anybody who donated to send me down here, you will hear those. We'll put those out on a special podcast, a members-only podcast. That'll be that. In the meantime, it's a real pleasure to welcome to the program Richard Eskow. He is with the Campaign for America's Future. Forgive me for, tell me just the evolution of this conference, because I, for the life of me, I can't get the name straight.
You know, it's the Take Back the American Dream Conference, and I am a senior fellow of the Campaign for America's Future, so I'm not like an administrative guy who knows the...
So you're not responsible for that name.
Exactly. Well, you know, I was trying to be less direct about that, but this year, you know, there's always been a conference for Campaign for America's Future, and this year the campaign teamed up with MoveOn.org and the Rebuild the Dream organization. So I don't want to speculate on the sort of debates or negotiations on the...
I don't want to put you on the spot, because obviously this is your employee. And well, I mean, let's talk about this in a very general sense.
Okay.
Because I got to tell you, I was a little skeptical to come down. I've never been to this conference before. And as I got even closer, I became more skeptical, because, and part of that is because, you know, I'm from New York. Right now, as far as I'm concerned, the epicenter of liberal energy and of just leftist sort of really, I actually believe this may be going out a little on a limb, but of political force in this country is emanating 20 blocks south, 35 blocks south of where I broadcast from, down in what they now call Liberty Plaza, formerly Zuccotti Park. Give me your sense. I mean, is that the sense here? I've only been here for 14 hours, so, but I get the sense
there's an awareness of that here.
Yeah, no, I think that's exactly right, Sam. I mean, I have gone to this conference for a couple of years. I think there was a period among the entire sort of historical left, whatever you want to call it. I think there was a period of depression and disappointment over the last couple of years with the political process. And I came here not knowing exactly what I was going to find because I thought it might be more of the same or more, let's stay on the same track of applying for a grant here or whatever. Not that there's anything wrong with that. I do apply for grants. But and I'm like you. I was at the Occupy Wall Street demonstration in New York a couple weeks ago. I really feel that's what's happening, and I think that energy has changed the energy here significantly. There's a real excitement here, and I think that comes out of that. I mean, you know, George Carlin used to do that routine about dominant and recessive cultural traits that, you know, if you put street kids and, like, Irish kids from Catholic school together, the street kids don't wind up talking like the Irish kids and saying, gosh and begorra, you know what I mean? It's a, some cultural strains overwhelm others and influence them, and I really feel like a lot of people here are enjoying the energy of Occupy Wall Street, really feeding off it in a positive way, and the fact that that's where the action is, and I think it is where the action is, I think is helping everybody else. It's lifting their spirits, giving them ideas, giving them energy.
Yeah, it's interesting that, you know, I mean, I am fixated on this idea, and maybe too much, but I am fixated on the idea of why. Of what it is, and to me, I think at the end of the day, the idea that people are willing to literally get rid of, you know, we have, what was it, three basics, right? Food, water, and shelter. And we have people who have willingly said, I'm going to go without shelter for an extended period of time. And just because I want the rest of the country to understand I'm that upset. That to me is almost like, it's like the Trump card. It's like, it's the Tea Party guys showing up with guns. It is, you know, what else can you do, really,
right.
You know, short of self-immolation? But that's why self-immolation gets some attention. But
painful.
I mean, but it's painful, but I mean, it was self-immolation that actually started what took place
in the Arab Spring. Absolutely.
And of course, that's hard to sustain.
Well, what you do is you take yourself outside the sphere of the traditional pressure of, if I go to this demonstration and get arrested, my credit rating, my FICO score will go down and I won't be able to get my next job. These guys, they don't have that anyway. But a lot of things roll out of saying, I'm not going to have shelter now, which is, these people are also giving up basic rights. They can't have a beer. They can't make love. They, you know, I mean, they're giving it all up. So you had that spectacle. One of the things that struck me.
You just got a great insight into what Richard's. What are the two most important things in Richard's life? There's a beer and.
I had to give up one of the two, so I gave up beer. But you know, you had the Wall Street bankers drinking champagne at a party,
yes.
Sneering at these guys. And I looked at them and I thought, first of all, I used to work on Wall Street, and that's why I drank, was to anesthetize myself, because I had a guilty conscience. But then they were looking down at these guys who are actually way more disciplined than they are.
Right.
They're living on the street. They're reacting nonviolently when they're provoked by the cops. They're living this disciplined life. It's great to watch. And when you've got that moral force, you know, like Gandhi had, like.
Right.
Protesters and like the Selma marchers had, it's tough to stand against.
Let's talk a little bit more about how you see that influencing what's going on here. I mean, just in terms of both in terms of mechanics, you know, what has changed? Because, you know, 3 weeks ago, this was very much about promoting this other sort of online, offline movement that is still very much about that, the American dream. But in some ways, I mean, there's a real contrast here. And I'm not making a value judgment, but there's a real contrast. One has been thoroughly organized, almost from a top-down perspective. I think that's fair to say. In fact, Van Jones started his presentation by showing a PowerPoint.
Right.
And talking about meta-brands and relative to the Tea Party. And one has sort of like sprung from a magazine,
right,
you know, a culture jamming magazine, basically saying like, hey, here's a good idea, do some culture jamming.
Right, right, right. No, I think that's right. And I think that, you know, I mean, the way I put it with one of the demonstrators I was talking to the other day was, you know, they're setting up a carrier wave, you know, where people, they're basically saying this situation is insane and unfair. We're going to gather together. It's almost like a human internet. You know, they're getting together to tell their stories about what went wrong. We are the 99, which you mentioned, the Tumblr.com. They're getting together to give people a chance to exchange ideas, to bond with one another, and to kind of let the process be driven from the bottom up rather than the top down. This is why, you know, I came out very strongly the other day in saying I didn't think they should have specific policy demands right now. The policy demand is stop being insane. You know, that's the demand. That's the one demand everybody talks about. So they get together and demand that people, and then everybody can sort of exchange ideas about, well, how do we, you know, stop being insane? And then the specifics fall out of that. But first, it's stop being insane, you know?
Exactly. And, all right, well, I want to get to Nancy Altman, but so give me a sense of what do you think happens now? I mean, you know, we're seeing today there are, you know, we're anticipating at Occupy Wall Street thousands of union members. There are more and more unions coming out. I noticed more union support for Occupy Boston. Occupy LA, obviously, is growing exponentially. Occupy Chicago, I spoke to a phone caller from Occupy Baltimore yesterday. This is growing significantly. What happens next?
Well, the beauty of this is that we don't really know what happens next. These guys have gone. I told somebody it's like those science fiction shows where a baby like grows into an adult in 3 weeks. You know, since September 17th, it's only a couple weeks. This thing has grown. They've already got an alliance with some of the major unions in the country. That's phenomenal. And when you're in New York City and you got the transit workers on your side, you make the transit workers mad, the city doesn't go.
Right.
So where this goes from here, I don't know. But the point is they're defining it themselves as they go along. I mean, I think where it goes from here is we watch, we help, we support, we go down, we stand, we protest with them, and we see what happens from there.
You know,
stay open.
You know, just one more. On the panel today, you made a very good point that that cultural breach between unions and the hippies, as it were.
Right.
And I'm using that term, basically reappropriating that term from the way I think that it's projected in the media in many respects.
Right.
That cultural breach has been sort of, is closing.
Right.
To expand on that a little bit.
Well, you know, it's phenomenal, and it makes all the sense in the world because the two groups of people that are getting most shafted, most screwed right now, are young people who graduate from college with $100,000 in debt and there are no jobs for them. We're ruining an entire generation of young people's economic prospects if we don't change. And working people, those are the two. So they're natural allies, and the great thing about now versus, let's say, 1970, where Nixon talked about the silent majority or whatever, is that they get it. Both groups understand it. And, you know, I loved it when the head of the transit workers, and those guys are not patchouli oil wearing love power people, when that guy said they're singing the same song we're singing. I just thought, okay, this is interesting. So I think that's a very powerful. I think Wall Street is right to be worried about this now.
Yeah, I agree with you. And, I think, of course, the other difference is, in fact, that unlike in the 60s, when there was a certain amount of cultural emancipation, the issues were more social than they were economic. This is, one of the really interesting things that are going to come out of this, because, you know, you and I are both on some of these lists, is that the reputation of hippies is going to change.
Right.
I really do believe this. Because the hippies, the association was with social issues. And I think there is something not as universal in some respects.
Right.
Or as universal as economic issues. Because it's one thing to talk about emancipation, but it's another to talk about a totally different sort of lifestyle. But now what we're talking about is simply financial survival.
Right.
People
absolutely.
Are upset about loans. People are upset about the way corporations have been involved. There's a real sort of like fundamental issues that I think are...
Well, and it's about financial issues, about people getting screwed and lied to, and then being blamed for allowing themselves to be lied to. Whether you're a student who took out a student loan because you were told there'd be a job waiting for you at the end, and when there isn't a job, somehow it's your fault, or you're a homeowner who refinanced your home because your bank said the value of that house will always go up, and when you go into foreclosure, it's your fault, but it's never the banker's fault. That's what these guys are unifying about. They've both been screwed, and they're both fighting back.
Richard Askell, thank you so much for joining me.
You bet.
All right, folks. We're going to take a brief break, and I'm going to get Nancy Altman over here from Social Security Works. Yes, Nancy. Have a seat, please. Here, why don't you sit right over there?
Yeah.
All right, folks. It's live broadcast. You understand. Nancy, are you there?
Yeah.
Okay, that's great.
Okay.
All right, so Nancy Altman, where, tell me the name of your organization, Social Security Works?
I am co-director of Social Security Works, and I co-chair a campaign called the Strengthen Social Security Campaign, which is an organization of about 300 national and state organizations.
And so, all right, you know, I remember a really important piece that you wrote, it must have been in December of last year, in response to the tax deal, when you were when we were putting a moratorium on the Social Security payroll tax, and yours was a piece that you wrote that really coalesced the opposition to this on the grounds that while perhaps stimulative, in fact, I think the jury's out as to whether or not, and just how stimulative of those tax cuts are. But what it was doing is undercutting the moral authority, the political authority of Social Security. And it was taking a program that contributed nothing to the deficit. And while that the reduction in payroll tax is made up by the general fund, it was providing a little bit more cover for foes of Social Security, and there's a lot of them, particularly in Washington, D.C., maybe almost exclusively in Washington, D.C. It was providing foes an opportunity in which to tie it into the deficit. At that time, there was every reason to believe that President Obama was going to put on the table in a very real way cuts in Social Security in the form of indexing inflation, the chain it to the CPI is the way that it's commonly referred to, I guess, in very narrow circles. Where do we stand now in terms of protecting Social Security?
Social Security has the broad, widespread support of the American people. I mean, polls show 80% think it's more important than ever. But as you say, there's a disconnect. The people in Washington, politicians, unfortunately, and some in both parties, as well as the mainstream media, see it in a very different way. So that it is in jeopardy. The Super Committee, which is this group that has extraordinary authority because their proposals are going to come out and come to the floor of the House and Senate under very strict rules and go flying.
These are the 12 congressmen and senators who've been appointed to basically come up with a way of cutting our deficit. If they don't, it triggers automatic cuts. Of course, even the automatic trigger could be voted away as well by Congress. But the real key is that it is essentially, if they do come to an agreement, it's been fast-tracked in a way that nothing else does. There's
exactly.
No Senate filibuster. There's no amending anything in the House. And it's basically...
Or in the Senate. No, it cannot be amended. It comes up. It has to come up on the floor. And it has jurisdiction over everything. And it is meeting behind closed doors. So it is unprecedented in the history of Social Security. That has always come up under normal legislative procedures where, as you say, you could filibuster it, you can amend it. So there's extraordinary power, and that is coming up right now. There's action on it. There's meeting secretly yesterday. They met secretly today.
And the really stunning aspect about this is that essentially the groundwork has been laid to defuse blame, to defuse accountability,
And hide accountability
and to make this thing as easy as possible for them to do this, because there's a reason why Social Security has been called the third rail of politics. And so they're trying to basically short circuit to really belabor this metaphor, the possibility of being electrocuted by the electorate.
That's right. All of these are efforts to avoid political accountability. The Social Security is certainly a program where there is, widespread agreement, and members of Congress should simply do what the American people want, which is, and what they certainly don't want, is to raise the retirement age or cut its benefits. It's a program that works. If anything, those benefits should be increased.
I think we should have a temporary lowering of the eligibility age so that we can also deal with our employment issue, frankly, right now.
It's very interesting. In 1961, we were in a recession, and the Kennedy administration proposed putting in the early retirement age for men that had been there for women at 62. And Congressman Vanek stood up on the floor and said, for every 2 million older workers that are able to take this retirement, that'll free up 2 million jobs for young people. What we should be doing
today,
too.
Did they do it?
They did it.
So they dropped it for a temporary period of time?
Permanent. That's how we have the early retirement age today.
Oh, I see. I should just make this clear to people. If you retire, you have the option of retiring early. You'll get less benefits, but you have the option. So if you're in a job that is physically too demanding, or if you can't find a job, which is a big problem for people right now in their in their late 50s, early 60s, can't get back into the workforce, you can take early retirement. You get less benefits, but obviously you can get into the system earlier.
In fact, part of the reason we call ourselves Social Security Works is that's just what it does. During this economic recession, people have lost home equity, 401ks have been those who have been fortunate enough to have private 401k plans have lost value in those. Social Security has paid those benefits every single month reliably. It is there. Early retirement has spiked because older workers who find themselves unemployed and run out of unemployment benefits have the option of claiming Social Security. So it's a program that works, that's supporting our several generations.
Let me ask you this, because I have Occupy Wall Street on the mind, and I think everybody here does. And the interesting thing is that Social Security, I've been down there, Social Security is one of the things that does not come up. And I suspect much of that is because you have mostly people in their 20s, 30s, 40s, who are there. Frankly, I'm in my mid-40s. I don't want to sleep outside. Do you think, though, that despite the fact Social Security is not in the forefront of their issue set, that this movement helps helps protect Social Security?
Absolutely. The purpose of this movement is economic security. That's what people are fighting for. And part of economic security are having decent jobs at living wages. Part of economic security is having wage insurance in case those wages are lost. And that's what Social Security is. We've got unemployment insurance, which is part of the Social Security Act, although we don't call it Social Security. You could lose... Social Security is the largest, people don't realize this, but it's our nation's largest children's program,
right?
Because it provides life insurance when a breadwinner has died, and it provides disability insurance for the family. So it's a part of economic security. It is exactly what the Occupy Wall Street is all about. It also is a leveler. It's the idea that it's got a progressive benefit formula with the understanding that people at the low end have less discretionary income to save and therefore need more protection for retirement. And it's exactly fits with all of those all of those concerns that are being expressed.
And frankly, without Social Security, these 20 and 30-year-olds, they're going to have to be taking care of their parents.
Exactly.
And, all right, so one final question. Why is it that I talk to supposedly, look, establishment liberals, big media types, people who go on shows and we presume, you know, people that we interviewed on Air America, who look at me and say, I don't like this Social Security chastity, it's not that big of a deal to raise the retirement age. What is this a function of?
First of all, there has been an enormous amount of money that has been over the last three decades, actually four, starting in the late 1970s, to discredit Social Security. There are people, I've written a book called The Battle for Social Security, which is really that in every generation there have been those who have not liked Social Security. What's changed is that nobody attacks Social Security as a policy. Everybody says it's a great program, but what they say now is it's unaffordable, it's unfair to young people. I mean, there are all kinds of things that have seeped into the consciousness of certainly of our elected leaders. There's Pete Peterson, who was Commerce Secretary under Richard Nixon, has put $1 billion of his own wealth into it. Raising the retirement age is nothing other than a 6% cut in benefits. Benefits are too low right now. They only average about $13,000. We have one of the lowest replacement rates of pre-retirement wages of any of the industrialized countries in this world. We are a wealthy nation. We can afford this minimal level of support, all of us together. It represents the best of American values, that we're all in it together, that we, as the president ran on, we're not just red states and blue states, we're the United States. This is a program that covers everyone. It should be strengthened. It should be improved. It should be increased. Benefits should be increased. And raising the retirement age or cutting benefits in other ways is the wrong way to go.
Nancy Altman, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me.
All right, folks, we're not going to take a break because Bill Scherer is right here. Thank you for stopping by.
Bringing the band and back together.
That's right. Ladies and gentlemen, you know what? Darn it. I should have pulled the old Majority Report. Bill Scherer.
We need the one with the good Scherer song clips.
Now, listen, you know, you've been in radio now for a long time. You don't know to speak into microphones?
I don't know what the quality of your microphone.
That I give you the lesser of the quality, because that way it makes me sound more authoritative to have a better quality mic.
That was Howard Stern's genius.
Oh, really? Is that what you did?
Yeah, he's got a little extra timbre on his mic.
That's right. I do the same thing. So, Bill Scherer from Campaign for America's Future. Let's talk a little bit about, give me your sense of, you know, I've been talking about Occupy Wall Street. And because, you know, look, you know, we did the Progressive Breakfast today, and I read your Progressive Breakfast memo all the time.
Which people can subscribe for at ourfuture.org.
Ourfuture.org. There you go. Nice plug.
Thank you.
Well done.
A professional.
And Matt will put that on our website back in New York City. Today, in your the email blast that you send out, the list, you know, it's about the Jobs Act. It's about machinations in the Senate on how to pay for it. And so much of that, from the very beginning, has been theater. We knew, you knew, I knew, the day the Jobs Act was announced, that's never going to pass. This is all, you know, and that's fine. I've been one of those people who have been calling for at least some rhetorical measures, put out some policies, lose wealth.
Mm-hmm.
What I understand is, like, why is it that when Occupy Wall Street started, people were like, this is just symbolic, it doesn't mean anything. It means more, doesn't it?
Well, certainly, I think if you talk to the folks who are here at the Take Back America Dream Conference, everyone has embraced the spirit of Occupy Wall Street here. I do think if you get out of this room, there's more debate going on. Is this the right tactic or the wrong tactic or what have you? But to some extent, that's very academic. And some people might be doing it in a disingenuous way because they just don't like what the protesters stand for. I think some folks are trying to be constructively critical and say, I think there's a better way to go about doing this. But the fact of the matter is it's happening. There is some energy going on in the street there, and it is reverberating around the country. And the attitude that you heard from one of our first keynote speakers, Van Jones, was, you know, this is not the time to, you know, whether you like Obama or don't like Obama, whether you believe in this tactic or that tactic, you know, that we can all agree that it's the time for independent organizing to push a broader progressive narrative that's going to resonate with the broader middle class. You don't have to agree on every last tactic that everybody else is doing.
Right.
For you to find your role and your place and try to sing off the same song sheet.
Yeah, give me your sense, and, you know, I understand I don't want to put you on the spot as well, but, I mean, give me your sense about the difference between the sort of institutional flavor, the establishment flavor. I mean, this, just give me a sense of where this conference and who the people here, where they sit in the larger ecosystem of the left first. Let's start with that.
I think a lot of the folks that are here are the folks who are in Washington that are trying to push on Washington, which is a different place than maybe what's going on, you know, different than the Occupy Wall Street folks to some degree.
Right.
You know,
a large degree.
Right.
I mean, when we're talking about just simply in terms of flowchart and species aside from politics.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, there's definitely a different vibe at this conference than maybe what you get at Roots Nation or what you get, you know, out on the street. But, you know, again, there's no one tactic. There's no one role that needs to be played.
I'm not making a judgment. It's just that, you know, like, you know me. I, you know, when I get in this type of situation, I don't feel so comfortable in this situation. You know, I don't feel
I knew you when you wore a bow tie.
Huh?
I knew you when you wore a bow tie.
That was a parody. I was trying to get people to think that I was Tucker Carlson.
A parody.
I was trying to get
people. Now I get it.
Are you serious?
I'm
kidding. I just, you know, people, I've said this many times in this program, but I wanted people to go like, what happened to that dude with the bow tie? He's like totally liberal now. But I mean, honestly, like there's, you know, I think it's fairly obvious I have a problem with institutions,
right,
and with establishment.
And I think, I mean, there are, just literally speaking, there are more institutions here. There's the AFL-CIO here. There's the SEIU here. There is, I can't list them off the top of my head, but obviously a lot of Washington-based organizations,
right,
that have provided some of the speakers that are here. But, you know, so you need people. You want somebody here. You want somebody within the bounds of Washington, D.C.
Right. No, I'm not saying that there shouldn't be people in Washington. What I'm just interested in, and these are, this conference is very much about people who are in Washington, whose job it is to influence Washington,
let me add that, though. There is a big attempt at the conference to connect that with what's going on outside. You know, the people that were honored at our big gala dinner last night were the protesters in Wisconsin and the Dream activists, the immigrant reform activists, trying to say, like, no one is arguing that all politics should be Washington-based, not by a long shot. The whole idea of the whole American Dream movement was to say all these things are springing up organically across the country on their own. Let's tie it all together so it gels into a bigger narrative that has the maximum impact possible.
Yeah, I mean, what I'm interested in is the power dynamics here, okay? Because it seems to me that you have institutions that are within Washington but pushing on Washington. And they have, there's complications there. Because to push on Washington, and if they're going to be in Washington, they need access.
Mm-hmm.
So on one hand, they need to maintain a certain amount of access. On another hand, which is different from people outside of Washington. Mm-hmm. I'm not making a judgment here. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm just trying to make a flowchart and explain it to the audience
as
to the dynamic works. Exactly. And so you have almost, you know, there's always sort of that ambivalence. I can get hard on Washington, being in Washington, but only so much because I don't want to lose access. Because if I lose access, there's no point in me being here. There's no efficacy. At the same time, you have something like Wisconsin, like Occupy Wall Street, which in fact, in some ways, depending on the organization, could theoretically empower them. Correct? I mean, if I am the guy in Washington who can say to the people I'm pressuring in Washington, I'm the only thing standing between you and those marauders who are out there in the country. You know what I'm saying? Like, on some level, this is how it's supposed to work, isn't it, in terms of politics?
Yeah, I mean, you want good cops and bad cops. You want street heat so you can go to the folks in power and say, hey, you want this to stop, this is what you have to do. FDR, was very explicit in separating liberalism from communism by saying, you better do the New Deal, otherwise this communist thing is coming right around the corner.
Right. I mean, that's exactly right.
But I think the whole notion of access, often when access gets talked about, it's done in a very negative light, because the presumption is you are compromising something to get that access.
Right.
You are filtering yourself. You are not saying what's on your mind. You're not speaking truth to power if you have access. And there are definitely, just speaking for my own organization, there are people here that talk to folks in the White House and try to convey what we think should be done. But you go to our website, you're not seeing, a whitewashed site. We have
right.
plenty of commentary on that site that is very pointed in criticism towards the White House.
Right.
You can do both. It is possible to, speak your mind and say what you think needs to be done and be able to pick up the phone and talk to somebody there and say, this is what I think you should do. You don't necessarily, at least with this White House, I think as it's proven, they're not shutting the door on people. They may say, there's plenty of examples where they've said things privately or publicly that certainly rub people in the progressive
really
the
like way. What
that, I'm sure you're
like
aware
what do you
this,
know
this,
I'm not sure what are
well,
you talking
this
about
is sort of wrong manual
yeah, I'm joking of course
talking.
We're all aware of it
there's heavy stuff like that but that doesn't mean they don't pick up the phone.
Right.
I can tell you, conversations are had. People do get to tell the White House, you should be doing X. People are mad that there isn't more being done on jobs. You should do more about that. You should do more about housing. They hear it. Now, what they do about it, obviously people can disagree.
Well, yes. Like having a 6-year-old daughter, I understand there's a significant difference between hearing and listening.
But my only point is that I think there are folks here at this conference that have access that does not mean that their words are compromised.
Right. And, I don't think that that compromise is a problem if those institutions do not represent the margin. In other words, the role of inside the Beltway institutions like this, I think, only function properly if there is an outside force that represents more of a threat to the establishment. And so that, because in any situation, it's not just when you are trying to leverage somebody, you want to give them an out. In other words, if I'm trying to change the course of a river, I don't want to just block it. I want to have small tributaries out and to direct where that flow of water is going.
Everything you're saying makes total sense. Just speaking for myself only here.
Of course. I should have a button that says... Disclaimer, this is everything that Bill Scherer says is represents only his views and no one else's views.
Since you're going to do good cop, bad cop, the bad cops should have some awareness that there are good cops, too.
Wait, who's the bad cop and who's the good cop in this scenario?
I suppose you're going to interpret that as you wish. But if you're going to be the folks who are trying to, strike the most fear into the establishment, so folks who are more on the inside will have more leverage. Once that leverage gets exercised, that may not bring about the result you are the most satisfied with, but you should go in knowing that was probably not going to happen in the first place. The whole idea of doing it was at least to push the system forward. So
yeah, but the people you're talking about wouldn't be doing what they're doing if they had that awareness. Right? I mean, that's not the way it works.
And it's a fair point. There's always going to be some tension.
That's like saying, why are these people who are slipping on the streets of Occupy Wall, why aren't they wearing nice suits? Well, I got news for you. If you can afford a $1,000 suit, guess what you're not going to be doing?
That's a completely, completely astute point. There's always going to be tensions within a broader coalition. Not everyone's going to get along. People are going to disagree. People are going to get mad. People are going to want to walk out sometimes. That's going to happen. But what you're laying out there is what the overarching point should be. put as much pressure on the system as you can so you get a better result than you would have otherwise. That's the idea.
Right. And and this pressure is growing now. I know you got to go. I mean, it's sort of hilarious here. We're down in the conference hall, and literally almost every single person has left to go. Tell where have they gone?
The whole idea is to take all the energy here, get on the bus, go to Capitol Hill, a big jobs, not cuts rally, to strengthen this message that the public does not want an obsession with deficit reduction. The public is obsessed with jobs, and that's where Congress's focus should be.
Was part of that idea to do it just as I was starting my show?
Sam,
Bill, when you invited me to the panel, you should have said, I didn't get the program. That's the thing. I didn't know.
We have this thing called the internet. It's a series of tubes.
Not aware of it. I couldn't get that because Netflix. Netflix was blocking it. I couldn't get any of my email.
I couldn't get any of the print copies of the newspapers. You want to get the ink on your hands when you read your Thomas Friedman.
That's right. That's absolutely right.
When you're in the cab yourself.
Now, let me... Well, I should just address this. I don't want to stop there. And if you have to go, give me a couple more minutes. But okay. Because I know right now my audience is saying, well, where's the debate between you and Bill about Obama?
Are you talking about me on the air?
No. Are you kidding? I get IMs about this all the time. What's wrong with Bill Scherer? What is with this guy? When are you going to have him on? What happened to him? You got to straighten this dude out.
This
is not the venue.
This is not the venue.
This is because, you know, you've got your professional cap, and it's too easy in a venue like this to get it too confused, right? I mean, so we won't go there. But just give me a sense of what took place at this, because apparently this is the not even the last day. This is the last minute of this conference.
Closing it down.
Literally, all I'm doing is I'm watching people. Right now, all I'm doing is watching people put the last of their displays into carts and to suitcases. It is pretty funny. I gotta say that if I had, you know, let me put it this way. At least the quality of the audio, I think, is good. And I do think that we are broadcasting right now. And soon I'll be able to put all the disparate pieces together of doing a remote broadcast. I got the tech down. Now I got to do some logistic work. So, like, actually have an event taking place when you broadcast from an event. All right, but tell me what took place over the past 2 days.
Well, again, I think there have been these tensions in the progressive community centered around Obama. Yeah, let's be blunt about it. I think there are some liberals who are saying Obama's doing his damnedest and he's gotten a lot of stuff done. And the liberals saying that he's been weak, or he's been timid, or he's been a big sellout, he was never one of us in the first place. You know, all sorts of criticisms out there. And, you know, not everybody agrees.
Right.
But I think here there was a message embraced that, you know what, that doesn't matter. Because there's things that we do agree on. We agree we should be pushing the parameters on the debate. We should not have this cramped agenda solely focused on deficit reduction. We need to be talking about jobs. We need to be talking about housing. We need to be talking about clean energy and doing something about the climate. We need to be dealing with how do we rein in Wall Street? How are we going to fight, you know, some way to tax the speculators? How can we deal with, what's going on with voter suppression, those Republican laws across the country? There's lots of things that we agree on, and we don't have to agree on every tactical thing, every political pundit point to
right.
come together and say, here's how we organize independently to do the best we can on those issues.
And where is the pressure point? Where is the if we're interested in pursuing those things, and we're basically saying it doesn't matter who Obama is or where he is on this, where is the pressure point? I mean, if we don't, do we still focus our energy on pushing the president, or is it at this point because we are so close? I mean, it's a year away, but
I have my own personal opinion about that. Just speaking totally for myself now.
All I want to know is your personal opinion.
Okay.
In fact, I'm going to edit out anything that isn't your personal opinion on this interview. So if you hear anything on this program from Bill Scherer, know that it's already been edited to contain only his personal views, and they're not representative of any organization or family or group that you would be affiliated with.
I think there's two vehicles going on right now. So let's forget about what you think theoretically should be being done. Two things actually happening. Occupy Wall Street, American Jobs Act. One is out on the street, no 10-point agenda, just, you know, straight-up outrage. Wall Street is the problem. We need to rein them in or take them down or what have you. And there's a piece of legislation that Obama is pushing and trying to draw a bright line and saying, if you think jobs are the problem, pass this. Don't quibble. Don't second-guess. Here's something on the table. You could do this right now if you wanted to. And if you're not for it, then you better explain to the public why. If you're inclined to not get bogged down in the legislative weeds and you want to just make a more, you know, white-hot indictment of the system, get down to Wall Street or start an Occupy event in your own town. If you think that strengthening this narrative that, you know, you're either for jobs or against jobs, and here's a bill that's going to let the public know where you stand, you know, get out there, call the radio stations, letters to the editor, call your congressperson, call your senator. I've called my senator, Scott Brown, a lovely gentleman in Massachusetts. Let him know we should pass the American Jobs Act.
Dude, he drives around a pickup truck. He's just like one of us.
You know, put your energy there. Because I think both of those things are getting traction. I think either of the things are sort of theoretical things that are sort of happening in the wind. Both things are having some momentum, and you could help. If you don't want them to peter out, and there's always a risk of petering out, if you don't want them to peter out, you got to do something about it. And you have the capability to do that.
So the message I'm hearing from Bill Scheer is, stop bitching about stuff, and stop bitching about stuff and making that your hobby or your vocation. There is now no excuse, regardless of what perspective you think you want to pursue, what channel you want to pursue.
The worst thing that's happened to us on the left, in my opinion, is that...
Speak for yourself.
I will speak for myself. We
children.
All read
it's having kids, right?
Exactly.
Are you going to say having kids?
No.
Okay. Me neither. No, that's great.
We all either read George Lakoff or Drew Weston, who are both very, you know, insightful people, and became armchair messengers.
Uh-huh.
You know, I now have some understanding of framing, and now I'm going to sit in my chair and complain if the framing is not to my liking. And that is not, that's being a bystander. That's being, I think, a pundit in your room and not getting out there and doing something. I mean, your analysis might be great.
Right.
You might be absolutely right that the messaging coming in Washington is terrible. But saying that doesn't do anything. You have an opportunity now, again, whatever your want is, I think, either if you're on the Occupy Wall Street side of things, the American Jobs Act side of things, you can do something to further one of those narratives, which I think are somewhat complementary, and help advance a serious goal.
And I have to say, you are saying that as someone I have always considered one of the best message people on the left. You know this. I've told you this years ago when your site was still green and yellow liberal oasis, and you were doing all of your coding by yourself because you refused to have a blog platform for some ungodly, I don't understand reason.
People were mad when I switched to movable type. So what happened to the classic sites?
That's right. Definitely your own look. Like you were doing your own HTML coding.
I was.
Okay, let me just ask you, because I respect your political instincts, let me just turn for a second. Give me your sense. Who's the weakest? Because, listen, regardless of my perspective on Obama, I don't want a Republican in the White House. And if there is no other option, and I don't think there's going to be, then I'm going to vote for Obama, and I'm going to make sure that a Republican loses.
Okay.
Which is the weakest? Give me your sense of who you think would be the weakest general, weakest general election candidate out of the Republican field that exists now. You know, obviously not Chris Christie, right, because he's not in anymore. And I have to say, let me just start this by saying, I turned on, I got up at 6 o'clock in the morning to do your panel. I want you to know. And I got in last night at 12:30. I turned on Morning Joe, which I never, ever do. But it was already on MSNBC. I was watching, I think, Rachel's replay last night. And I thought they were talking about the crash of the helicopter in the East River. The tone of Mika and everybody on that show, it was like a funeral. And it took about 10, 15, 20 seconds. And just from the tone, I got the sense of, wow, they're really somber. They must be talking about that helicopter thing. And they were talking about Chris Christie not running. Like it was like an American tragedy.
Which, as Thomas Friedman said, it was in his column today.
That's right, of course. And, you know, Mika was just like, I can't. The way that people wrote about him with his weight problem, I think it would have been a wonderful thing for America to help obesity acceptance or whatever the fuck it was. Like, I couldn't believe it.
Right. This is, and I will get to your other question. But
no, yeah, this, okay, but go.
But it's somewhat relevant because you have this sort of centrist, you know, there are blind ideologues everywhere, and there are blind centrist ideologues, and Meeker and Joe are two of them. And they didn't read Christie's speech. If you actually read his speech, it is glaringly hypocritical and inconsistent. I mean, on the most basic level. He said in his speech, you know, Obama failed the league because he didn't embrace Simpson-Bowles. Simpson-Bowles, that was a reduction plan. Which
is absolutely not true. He not only did he embrace Simpson-Bowles, he established Simpson-Bowles. It wouldn't have been Simpson-Bowles.
He offered something to John Boehner, which was really similar to, if not to the letter of it. It was
yes.
Along the same lines. But you put
but
that,
there was no Simpson-Bowles anyways.
Put that all aside. Put
right.
that all aside. Part of Simpson-Bowles, plenty of bad things about it, of course. It did raise taxes on the wealthy.
Right.
That is part of the deal. That is part of the grand bargain. And at the end of his speech, after saying this, Obama was not a leader because he didn't embrace Simpson-Bowles. He then said, Obama is vilifying success by saying we should tax the wealthy. And then he goes on to say, the reason why no one tackles deficit reduction is that people get vilified when they try to propose solutions. So the whole thing makes no sense. And if he spent 2 seconds in an actual presidential debate, as we've learned with Rick Perry, guess what? You can ask questions sometimes.
Right.
Even in Republican debates, even on Fox News, you have to answer a tough question sometimes.
Right.
At some basic level.
Right.
You can't handle that, you're going to look ridiculous.
Right.
And Chris Christie was going to look ridiculous if he actually
right.
put himself out there like that.
Right.
And at least give him the credit. He was smart enough to know, you know what? One
no,
speech in the Reagan Library is not the same thing as a presidential campaign.
No way. You're right. And, you know, you and I both know the day after New Hampshire, he's out of the race.
Right, right.
There's no other two ways.
So now you're left with, you know, essentially Romney and Perry, and maybe Herb McCain now. I mean, the CBS poll, he's literally tied for first place in the CBS poll with Romney.
To me, that says the Republican establishment hates Perry.
And Romney.
Well, and Romney.
Well, I mean,
but,
it's different. I mean, they hate Perry. They're uncertain about Romney. They'll probably settle for him given the choices.
Right.
But they're certainly not like, Romney's our guy. Let's run to the finish line. There's great trepidation that he can get the job done. I mean, in October 2007, when it was Clinton, Obama, and Edwards, they were all three in double digits. And Hillary's at 42%. Now you can look at that and say, well, she lost. But there was great satisfaction with the three. Even though there was a lot of friction and debate, it went on for a long time. No one thought that any of the three was somehow, you know, not ready for prime time.
Right.
They were all high stature candidates. So this lot, the Republican poobahs, but the fact their desperation of Christie was so blatantly public.
Right.
They're telling the public, we think our guys suck. No matter where they are in the intellectual spectrum, we do not have confidence these guys can get the job done. So in that sense, they're all relatively weak. Although, but, you know, the economy's bad, and even a weak guy can win. So I'm not
right.
saying
Right,
okay, all,
yes.
All
no, I agree with you. We're putting aside the economy is going to be what the economy is. So we're putting that aside for the moment as we make this evaluation. We're getting this is really sort of like barroom politics,
right,
Doc. I feel like I'm Lawrence O'Donnell, and you're John Halperin from or whatever one of those douchebags are. And
Halperin?
We're just Halperin. We're these two just big douchebags talking about this stuff because we don't want to dig into any of the policy issues.
We should have been talking about this
8 months ago.
Obviously, Kane's the weakest because he's a joke.
Right,
so
Kane's a joke.
If they actually go completely...
No, they're not. They're not in a million years. Come on, give me a break.
I would say 99% chance.
This
not,
is
but
just to make this, all this those Tea Partiers like, convinced, like, We're definitely not racist. The reason why we're voting against Obama is not because he's black. It's because he's not from this country. It's because he's Kenyan. It's because he's a socialist. It's not because he's black. It's not because he's black. It's not because he's racist. I was going to vote for Herman Cain. I really was.
So just to make Romney Perry here, I think Perry is the weaker candidate. For two reasons. One, he's more easily painted as outside the mainstream. It's hard to defend Social Security's unconstitutional. And it's hard to defend that creationism is science. You know, those things just knock you out of the box right away. And on top of that, he's proven to be weak when faced with a tough question.
Right.
And you have to have some thick skin to be at this level. And he has, maybe he gets better. You know, you look at Obama's debates from 2007. He was not fantastic.
No.
But he got better as he went along. And maybe Perry gets better as he went along. So far, he's gotten worse as he's gone along.
Right.
So I'm not expecting that.
That's right.
And Romney is such a cipher, is so unprincipled, lacks such conviction. He can just go anywhere at any given time. He's not restrained by any bounds of reality. And in some ways, that's an advantage.
Well, you know.
You can be flexible in the moment, but it's to such a degree. Again, so I think that makes him relatively stronger than Perry.
I actually have the opposite opinion. And I'll tell you why. Because what you're describing is so easy to attack on a personal level.
And that's what they would do.
And that's what they would do because if you have a president who is at least personally liked, okay, his job approval is not so good, but as a person, people like him.
And still not blamed for the economy, which I think
still not blamed for the economy.
We go 3 years in and not get the blame.
Right.
It's striking.
Yes. And I think, you know, I believe in that notion of strong and wrong beats weak and right.
Yeah.
And when you describe a guy who's a cipher, mm-hmm. who bends each way, mm-hmm. who's so easily influenced, mm-hmm. you're describing a weak person.
Right. And what Obama can do against Romney, so he's got to attack this guy.
He's not
going to
attack his ideology.
No.
He is going to attack him for being a corporatist, mm-hmm. which, you know, talk about glass houses.
He'd be a job destroyer.
A corporatist at a time, I think, in 12 months from now, we're going to see the notion of, you know, Obama's already embracing the you know, I'm a warrior for the middle class.
Right.
He's already targeting, you know, he is already targeting Romney in that way. And I think the bigger danger when you have a sort of a referendum type of election, which, you know, it's going to be
referendum on the incumbent. They always are,
right,
to some degree.
But you want a distinct choice.
Yeah.
One that inspires confidence. You don't even necessarily agree with what their idea is, but you want them to believe that they believe in what they're talking about. And Romney doesn't have that.
And the ad that they can run against Romney, which I think would be devastating. You can take video of Romney from 10 years ago, 5 years ago, saying the exact opposite thing,
yes,
that he's saying today with the same exact level of intensity and fake sincerity.
I'm going to even go one up on you. I think you could get him going from, which is really going to be bad, going from one side of a position to the other side of a position back.
Right. Right.
Like, it's one thing to flip-flop. It's another to flip-flop. Flip-flop.
Right. And you can knock Romney around 8 ways a Sunday on those times. I mean, it's not like it's one thing.
And there's no way for him to defend himself. You know, it's one thing to say, you're out of the mainstream, Social Security is a Ponzi scheme. I mean, I happen to think that that's also pretty devastating for somebody, but, you know, because Social Security is just sets off too many alarm bells. But at least you can respond with, like, look, Social Security is broken, blah, blah, blah. It's dry. You have arguments, mm-hmm. That sound like they're based on policy, mm-hmm. particularly to the vast amount of Americans who don't really, once you go 3 sentences in on that, forget about it. Game over. They're already checked out. But to go, like, you're a guy who can't even make up his mind. You're just going to go with everybody. Everybody's like, oh, I know people like that. Yeah, I know. I know a-holes. I know people who are just, you know, yesterday she said this, and then tomorrow she said that. And these are he can be drawn as that person in your life that you don't like.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And I think that's why Romney, in some ways, is a little weaker.
We're quibbling. I mean, I think that's the playbook they would run.
Right, I know, but this is how we fill time. Like, if we have, like, you know, like it's like Lawrence O'Donnell and John Hopper, and we could do a whole show this way, and then I don't have to, like, say, like, oh, I should tell you that I'm the only person in this hall right now. It is stunning.
Let me say the ad I think they wrote against Perry, if it was Perry. The best ad of the 2010 race was in California, Jerry Brown versus Meg Whitman. Here's someone who's outspent like a zillion to one. But he ran an ad against Meg Whitman that basically was Meg Whitman quotes and Arnold Schwarzenegger quotes, saying the exact same thing over and over again. And it's not like they were sort of devastating quotes of themselves. They're just sort of general boilerplate Republican stuff. But, you know, we need a business person to shake up Sacramento. We need to cut taxes to create jobs. And just one after the other with the exact phrase. Because it's the phrase that they all use. Except that Schwarzenegger at this point had 30% approval rating. So right. Why would you want to replicate this? And you can do those Perry Bush ads all day long.
Right.
Perry Bush, Perry Bush, Perry. They sound the same. They're saying the exact same things. Because the Republican Party in general hasn't done any updating of their talking points since, you know, right. 2001. There's been no attempt to say, you know what, that Bush thing didn't work. So we're going to refresh our conservatism to say, we learned some lessons from this, so we're going to propose something else.
You would put Perry and Bush, Bush 2004 together. But I'm pretty convinced that you can also put Romney, Bush 2000 together. People forget he ran as the CEO president. Right. I don't know if people forget that. The compassionate conservatism CEO president.
Yep.
And that's going to be the one that I would bring back for Romney. We had a CEO president.
Right. And thankfully, people are retaining their memories of Bush. I mean, that's a risk that after 3 years you wouldn't remember. And I don't think the Democrats have done this as strong as they could have done it. You want to burden people's brains.
You know, back in 2004 when Air America launched, in April of 2004, I would get calls every day. Clinton, 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 Clinton,
right.
Clinton, Clinton,
right.
Clinton, 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 Clinton,
Jimmy
Clinton.
Carter.
Yeah.
I mean, 30 years after.
Right.
I mean, it's harder with Clinton because Clinton is seen as a successful president. Carter is seen as a failed president, so they want to compare Obama to Carter now.
Yeah. Liberals have a real problem.
Bush and Republicanism. And even though there hasn't been a strong institutional push to do it, people still remember.
Yep.
You see a Bush-Obama polling, the numbers go up and down. Sometimes it's not as good as we would like, but still, when the blame game it comes up, Bush is always blamed more than Obama every single time. People remember.
Bill Scherer, it is always a pleasure to talk to you, and it's even more of a pleasure to talk to you in person.
I know.
Which we rarely have a chance to do anymore because you live up in the Berkshires.
The Pioneer Valley, a different part of the Berkshires. Berkshires is the other side of the mountains.
Sorry.
No, your master's geography. You're from Worcester.
Dude, I'm from Worcester. Anything to the west of us is...
You know what
it's called?
They call
Pittsfield.
You the west.
We call it Pittsfield. That's what we call it. That's right. And if you're in Boston, it's just like, what's to the west of us? Springfield. We don't have very attention to the west.
But we'll go deeper into the Obama question soon. I give you
yes.
my pledge.
Okay. And are you still doing your weekend show?
I do.
With that girl who wants to pick a fight with me or
yeah,
something?
Yeah, she likes to mix it up. She's
What's
Irish.
Her name, Tracy?
Yeah, she's a drunk Irish girl, so, you know, she wants to pick fights.
She always drunk?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's why it's a great show.
So she comes in Saturday morning drunk.
We tape on Fridays.
Oh, Friday nights?
Yeah. Friday late afternoon. She starts early.
Where do you make it available as a podcast?
It's just a podcast. We can't. We don't have all your fancy thingamabobs over here.
Oh, so you're one of those guys. You don't do it live. Okay, fair. You know, I should tell people, and I'm going to continue on for another couple minutes. If you joined us at 11:30, you'll be wondering why the show is so short. It's not. Actually, I started at 11 today. There's one clip of Obama. Of Limbaugh that I want to play. Have you seen this?
No, I haven't.
This is unbelievable. I'm going to see. Maybe you can't. Mike Stark has been calling Limbaugh.
Okay.
And terrorizing him. And, in fact, I spoke to Mike yesterday, I guess it was. And he called again yesterday. And Limbaugh loses it, not on Stark, but on the next caller, because he's so angry at his producer. I've never seen anything like this. And, you know, look, I've worked in radio. I've worked in radio with people on a broad spectrum of emotional stability. Okay? I've worked, and so, you know, I know the type. I know the frustrations. Look, I think it's fairly well known that I had an accident with a piece of drywall at the Air America offices. You know, so, you know, different things drive people's temper. For me, it was the complete incompetence of the management at Air America. You know, you show up at work one day, you're doing a call-in show, and they're like, I don't think we paid the bill on the 800 number. You know, and that type of thing. And he's like, you got to be effing kidding me. Like, you know, like, what else is there? You know, it's one thing that we got to go, you know, I got to walk four blocks to get something printed, but you're not going to have a phone, you know. So, but in this instance, Limbaugh loses it. I'm going to try and play this. Bill, come around this side.
All right.
You may not. Oh, wait a second. I got to plug this in here. Now you won't be able to hear it. That's the problem. But
I think I can cut a little bit.
No, you won't be able to hear it because I'm. But you will watch his face. Okay, so I'm gonna play this now. Let's see if I can hear.
Hello.
Okay.
Hey, Murphy, talk about how Durbin, it's just not his place as a senator to get involved. But I've heard Republicans get involved in telling women where they can get health care with Planned Parenthood. They said don't buy Dixie Chicks records. They've railed against the New York Times. And I know of at least one impotent pill-popping propagandist on the radio that got his start on Armed Forces Talk Radio at the behest of Republican interference. So please don't tell us that it's not the place of a politician to speak out about issues that are important to millions and millions of people.
I don't know.
To do it.
I don't know what politician told people not to buy the Dixie Chicks records. I don't know what politician. What are you talking about? Planned Parenthood. All that is.
Now, I should say, if you're watching this video, and we will put it on Majority.fm, that was Mike Stark's, you know, and he weaved in there like, I know of one pill-popping guy who was on Armed Forces Radio. And so, you know, and Limbaugh's trying to contain himself. And when he moved his left hand there, he was cutting off Stark. So he's rambling now. And what's going to happen is he's going to say goodbye to Mike Stark. And at one point, you'll notice he goes again and he spits it because he knows it's Stark. And he can't stop Stark from calling because Stark is spoofing his caller ID. And Stark's callers are getting through and it's driving Limbaugh crazy. Now, watch what happens now. Okay, so he's
talking. You, again.
Again.
Identify yourself and the way you think as another obstacle that all the rest of us face for our freedom.
Now he's going to get angry.
You're just a glittering jewel of colossal ignorance. You're an arrogant snob. An arrogant, full-fledged snob, and you don't know 10% of what you think you know. So because you've been ill-informed, misinformed by a faulty education system or whatever it is. But people like you...
threatening. People like you.
You're just part of the pack we're going to have to run over.
You're part of the pack we're going to run over.
You're just part of the pack that we're going to look at and smile in the rearview mirror in November 2012.
I tell you.
Take care, Kevin. Have a great day.
Take
John,
care,
Union
Kevin,
City, Pennsylvania.
Gets a new guy
welcome
on
to the EIB Network.
Who is slightly annoying.
Oh, thanks, Rush. It's so good to talk to you. I've been trying to get through for a long time.
Watch.
I got through a couple weeks ago when you were doing your bit about...
Limbaugh's looking at his IM now.
If you
puts his glasses
comment
on.
...comment by the president. So, Bo didn't think my comment was worth anything then, so I didn't get a chance
producer's
to get
writing
it,
like,
sure
I don't know how Stark got through again. I tried to screen him.
I called today to give you mega ditto.
But I blew it.
Pennsylvania. I was born and raised in Tom Ridge's neighborhood.
Limbaugh is like looking at the IM now.
A couple weeks ago, too, if I could have gotten through that.
He's reading it. What is this producer saying to me? He's barely listening to the guy. And now he's pissed.
Stuff and all that.
He pushes himself away from his desk.
Hey.
Stop telling me what you told him and talk to me. You've got 1 minute. This is why you didn't get on last time. You've got 1 minute to get where you're going.
Well, Joe Biden should be leading the whole group of protesters out there on Occupy Wall Street because 95%...
That is beautiful. Did you see? Now, you didn't hear this, Bill, but he was yelling at a guy who was just a, like, you know, sorry, a stumbling, almost nervous caller. And he'd go, you got 1 minute. He's so pissed. And he's not pissed at that guy. He's pissed at his producer because he cannot stop Stark. And Stark now has like a cadre of people that are calling him. And it's driving Limbaugh crazy. And he cannot do it. The worst thing for a guy like him is to lose control of his show. Like, you know, you felt this. You've done live radio. The worst feeling is like, I have none of the mechanisms that I rely on a daily basis are working. You know, it's such a habitual thing that when one of those things breaks down, it just drives you crazy. And the idea that these people are calling in and taking over his show and he has no way to stop them. You know, Limbaugh is one of those guys who could talk for 3 hours and never take a phone call. But just the idea that he would have to do that would drive him crazy. And I love that. God bless Mike Stark. If we had 1,000 Mike Starks, it'd be a very different world. It would also be a lot funnier. Significantly funnier world. All right, folks, tomorrow, just on a programming note, I will be down live from Occupy Wall Street teaming up with Citizen Radio. Hold on, let me see. I got here, I'll get one of these. How come I can't hear that? Let me try that again. I'm going to play the Blowout Shofar one more time. Right. That's right. Citizen Radio and the Majority Report teaming up for a live dual broadcast from Occupy Wall Street. My expectation is it's going to be an amazing, amazing technical disaster. That would be my expectation and my prediction, but we'll see. Now, also, if you are a member, know that I'm going to attach, I'm not going to be able to attach it to this, but I'm going to put out sometime this week the panel that I was on with Nicole Sandler about media with Tom Hartman, Cliff Schechter, and Tim Carr from Free Press. And I may, Bill, would you close your ears for a second? I may borrow the audio from the Progressive Breakfast thing. It's available, I understand that, but I may borrow the audio and the dude who makes best of the left. He's certainly not going to. He's not going to squeal on me. Let me borrow the audio and put it out there for members only. You got no problem. That's what it's all about, right? You guys aren't making any money off of that. It's about spreading the word. But you see, Bill is very cautious, not to, like, his plausible deniability, because you cannot. I understand. Don't worry. We'll cut this part out. Not really. I don't have the ability to edit anything. All right, ladies and gentlemen. So I will see you tomorrow, and we will put that. Wait a second. Oh, no, that's not the. Oh, no, I'm going to do this song. All right, folks. In that signal street, that guy, to get to where I want, but I know some. All right, folks, see you tomorrow. We'll be live. We probably will start a little bit early again tomorrow. But maybe we'll have some video capability. I don't know what's going to happen tomorrow. I really don't know, but it should be very interesting. And then Friday will be a normal show. But tomorrow should be great. We'll be down to Occupy Wall Street. I can't wait to go get on my internet devices and find out what's happening today. Today should be very exciting down there. Check out the live stream at Global Revolution. And please don't forget, I need your membership to support this program. It is 99.9% of my revenue comes from your membership. Not yours, Bill. I know who joins, Bill. But Jay is a member. Bill is not a member. Please become a member, folks. And always, don't forget, you can support us by donating your account. DonateYourAccount.com/MajorityFM. Buy your crap. You buy through Amazon. Buy it through our link. We get a kickback. Yeah, bookmark the link. Just keep going back to it. We get a kickback. It's going to pay for Myla's braces over time. And JustCoffee.coop, fair trade, organic coffee, tea, chocolate, 10% discount. Use the coupon code MAJORITY. Thanks for joining us. Listen to you tomorrow. Talk to you tomorrow. See you tomorrow. Bye.